You're listening to Casual Swim.
Swinny, you're a technological genius for sorting that out. Not really, but it is what it is. So, Tim Swinney, thanks for talking to Casual Swim. Welcome to London. When was the last time you were here?
I don't remember exactly, but I think about a year ago.
Okay. And you said you play here every year, and it's like...
I think about once a year I would be in London, yeah.
And how does it differ to other cities in the world?
Well, London's kind of, I think, special for me because I know there are a lot of radio show listeners here. So when I come, I have to be prepared for it because I can't play like the same set. You know, you have to, there's some hardcore fans here, so you need to like do something special.
Speaking of fans, so you just had a pretty intense fan experience with an Italian man, but can you tell us about that fan scenario, about the stalker issue? Seeing as we are celebrating your 20 years, we need the best hits of Tim Sweeney.
Well, you need to look this up because
it should be Researcher 101. But
yeah. It's on SoundCloud. Is this? I put the messages up because there's a listener called Victor from Washington Heights, which is an area in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. That he was calling from, and I put his messages. I made this hotline number, the Beats in Space hotline, for people to call up and leave messages for me, and he ended up calling up, every week and leaving messages for me, basically hate messages when he, really disliked the radio show, and they were pretty intense about like killing me, and so I put them online. Because, I thought if I ever mysteriously vanished, people would know.
You'd have a record.
Yeah. But it turned out like people really liked the messages because he was a very New York character. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of, crazy, descriptive messages about killing me. And he kind of became a part of the show, which I haven't heard from him in over a year now. So I don't know what's happened to him. But he was like, for a good, few years, he was an important part of the radio show.
BIS. Okay, well, that's interesting. Well, I guess to a more paramount point is the fact that you're celebrating 20 years, which is huge. Did you ever think that you'd get to a position where you're in London City celebrating a mammoth 20 years?
No, I think I probably hoped I'd be on the BBC by now and... not be still on college radio. And I didn't, when you start a show like 20 years ago, I didn't know where I was going to go with it other than I enjoyed doing it. And I didn't have like a specific end time date to it. And I still don't. I didn't know where it was going to take me or what was going to happen. I just kind of rolled with it.
Speaking of that, like, can you tell us about where it all started and kind of the ideology behind it? Did you have a vision as such, or like how did it all spawn, or where was the initial like eureka moment, or was it more subconscious than that? But what was that starting point?
When I was in high school, I played on a couple college radio shows and I really enjoyed it, and so I knew when I would go to university I would want to do my own radio show. And I ended up going to New York University. I played on that radio station when I was in high school, so I got in touch with the radio station as soon as I got into the university, and I said, hey, I've already played on your radio station, I want to do my own show now. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, you know what you're doing, get started. So from then on, I just was there and committed to it. It wasn't, a eureka moment. It was just kind of I enjoyed doing it and I wanted to be there every week doing the show, finding new music, having different guests on. And I mean, the guest thing, you know, now it's definitely known for having all the different guests, but at the start, it was just me. Actually, the guy who I have tonight in London, Sasha from In Flagranti, he was one of the first guests I had on the radio show back in, you know, 1999 or 2000. And it kind of, you know, getting guests happens because you get one guest like him, and then you can get a friend of his, and then a friend of theirs, and it kind of just snowballs like that. I mean, this is like just how you do your interviews. It kind of works the same way.
I guess so, but I think there's an art with curation. You could essentially get, I guess, the biggest or like the most like banging artist, but that doesn't seem to be your output or your vision. How do you go about curating people or DJs or artists for your show? Like, you must have some kind of thing at the back of your head, which is like, that would be a really good fit, or this would be a really good fit. It's not all about finding the biggest people who are going through New York at the time, right?
Yeah, it's definitely, I think for me, I want to be inspired every week with the radio show, and that's a big part of it. And that happens with both, you know, big name artists and unknown people. And, you know, for me, it would be more fun having someone on the show that no one knows about and them just killing it and everyone talking about it than having, you know, it's than having a big name person that everyone already knows about it. A lot of it also has to do with who's in town. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I look at the schedules of who's playing in New York, because this wasn't originally a rule, but it has become a rule in the last probably 10 years, was that I record everyone at the radio station. So that kind of makes it so, you know, the person has to be in New York. So I look at who's coming into town. I look at all, you know, all the club schedules. I see who I'm interested in, or I'm listening to records at the record store and I really like an artist or a record label, and I get in touch with them and I say, hey, if you ever come to New York, I'd love to have you on the radio show. Just please let me know. It's one of those ways that it happens with getting someone.
But you're now kind of known as the man in New York in a way. Has it gone from I guess the position of you approaching artists to now people approaching you?
Yes. I mean, there's definitely that aspect of it too. It, you know, I've gotten used to that now, because that was not the way it was before. Yeah. And turning down people is also like a really difficult thing to do. I guess there's kind of an art form in doing that.
So what, there's a lot of people who come through New York who would love to be on your show who hit you up. How do you go about turning them down?
Well, you know, a lot of times I won't have to speak directly. It'll be like a PR person. Yeah. Or, you know, it'll be a manager, or, you know, or it's just like, if it's the artist and it's not someone I'm interested in, then you just have to tell them, you know, it's not going to work out this time.
Well, when I listen to your show, there seems to be a lot of 4/4, which isn't a bad thing, but you're an electronic man. Is that a true thing, or?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I enjoy kind of all kinds of music. Like, I try and keep it more to the dance floor because the time slot, 10:30 p.m. to 1 a.m. in New York on the radio station is supposed to be more like dance focused. But, you know, it can be anything. Sometimes, you know, I've had Brazilian guys playing live, or, you know, bands. It changes. So, yeah.
So I guess with electronic music, there's parallels with other music being timeless as such. But do you think that electronic music has a timelessness as such? Like, do you not think that there's like certain peaks? Like, at the moment, it's like Public Possession and the whole Swedish thing is like blowing off. But do you think timelessness and electronica is like a thing, or?
Well, that seems like it's very subjective, no?
Yeah, super subjective.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess, yeah, that just depends on your opinion. But I would say yes. But, you know, I mean, that just depends. Like, one person goes out tonight and has an amazing time and, you know, sees a DJ and hears something and that affects them so much that becomes timeless for them, you know? So
yeah, I know it's a weird question, but let's look at a parallel. Like, let's look at indie music for such.
Yeah, 100%. It's it's all ups and downs that same way, all trends happening. You know, definitely I feel that here in London, especially, I think you see it and feel it a lot more than I think any other city in the world, because there's just so much music things happening here, so much music press happening here, and you know, the press always needs something to talk about. That's a new thing.
Be gentle, mate.
What? Yeah. Oh, no, no. Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm pressed too, so it's just, you know, there's, you know, the conversation is always changing. That's what we also, that it comes back around, that, you know, right now I feel like I'm hearing on the radio show people playing drum and bass, jungle, that, you know, I hadn't heard since the 90s, and that's come back again. So it's like, you know, everything comes in phases.
I guess what I'm trying to ask you is, like, is there a difference between a fad artist who has a few good records as opposed to an artist that will stand the test of time for 5 to 10 years? There's all these artists that have amazing records who are just like popping off at the time, but potentially they'll get lost. And
yeah, I mean, I see that with doing the radio show for 20 years, definitely I've thought about it a bit, about who I've had on the radio show that have now you don't hear about anymore. And there's a lot of people like that, you know, that maybe I thought at the time of having them, you know, I thought they could be something, you know, a lot bigger. And, you know, you never know what happens that causes it. Causes the person to not, you know, get big. It is an interesting thing. I mean, and it's something that, like, I've looked at. Just, it's a hard business to be in, where you know, it's one day you're it with that record, and you try and make it again, and no one wants to hear the same thing again, you know. So, and then you try and make another hit, and it just never works. And for some people, then maybe they can do it again. And if you're able to do it twice or three times, then it's like, then you're lasting, you know?
Amazing. So moving on to a question about continents, but do you think there's a divide between the US and Europe in terms of electronica? Is there something that you guys are famous for and Europe's famous for? Do you think you guys have caught up, or do you think Europe's always been ahead, or like, How do you think about continents like that?
Well, it sounds like you do.
I definitely do, because
I'm taking that from your questioning.
So when I asked Flying Lotus this, and yeah. I was like, so is there a divide between, I guess, Europe, and it was LA at the time, yeah. And he said, he was like, oh yeah, London had the whole dubstep thing, and that kind of diminished. And LA's got its whole like jazz electronica. He was like, sometimes you've got it. He said ebbs and flows.
Yeah,
that was his comment. But for you being electronic man, what do you think about, I guess, the USA Europe divide? Do you think we're closely aligned, or do you think, how does it differ?
I mean, I think that's another thing that. It feels like it goes in cycles. I mean, you know, in terms of club music, I think, and dance music, I think it, for me, and this is just going to be American-centric thinking.
Of course.
You know, but I think it started, you know, in New York and Chicago and Detroit, but especially, you know, New York with David Mancuso doing the loft parties. That influence was huge in starting the whole club scene. And you know, I think now it's changed, where, you know, the clubs opening in New York You know, it used to be the clubs opening in Europe kind of looked to New York or Chicago or Detroit. And now I think a lot of the clubs, a lot of people look to Berlin and Panorama Bar. Like, everyone wants like that. I would say in what I see in, say, the clubs opening in New York would be like, for the past 10 years have looked more towards opening a style of club that looks more like it came out of Berlin than what Berlin was opening that was kind of influenced from New York at the time, you know, before that. Yeah. You know, so like, it's that kind of...
I get it. So that's like the whole Innovision sound in a way. That's transcended. And that moves me on to my next point. For instance, I just bought this at Fonica. It was a DFA record that Dixon did of an edit of LCD. And that proves your point, which is the whole fact that the German sound has transcended into America. With you rolling with the DFA, can you tell us about how that whole started and like your affiliation with them as such?
I started working with them when I was at the university at NYU because I was studying music there, and I was DJing at a bar called Plant Bar, and the guys from Plant Bar, the owner of it, Dominique, had his office with the DFA guys. Mm-hmm. And when they told me how he was working with this guy Tim Goldsworthy, who's
a Brit, right?
Is, yeah. British, yes. And I think Tim, you know, was a big influence there, you know, isn't talked about maybe as much as he should be. Mm-hmm. But, you know, yeah, Tim was a huge influence for me, and I was a fan of his work for a long time. So when I was able to meet him and, you know, found out he was living in New York and met him at Plant Bar, you know, I asked him if I could help out at the studio, and he said, yeah, come in on Monday. And that's how I started working with the DFA guys, just as an assistant to Tim and James in mm-hmm. the studio.
Amazing. So you're a man of many talents. I guess you have gaming and radio shows and DJs and a record label. How do you balance the commercial side and the music side? Like, are you a commercial man? Is numbers a thing, or like...
I'm on college radio, so there's no commercialization of
you still,
that.
You must be doing pretty well if you're traveling the world, having a record label, and living off the music industry, because the music industry is not the most profitable industry unless you're
Beyonce. That is very true. Record labels also do not make any money. It is only really from touring that you can survive.
Mm.
But it's been tough. I'm going to... you know, admit, like, the past few years have not been easy, and I've had to like look at what else I can do, because, you know, it paying the bills in New York is expensive.
I must imagine so. And I guess with Rockstar and Gamings and GTA, how did that come about?
Well, that was a long time ago now. That was when my last year of university, I got the job there as soundtrack supervisor at Rockstar Games.
So that they didn't approach you as such. You had to approach them, and you got the role.
Someone wrote me and said, you know, Rockstar is looking for people into music to, you know, submit their resume. So I was like, I was just about to finish the university. I didn't have a job. And so I, submitted my resume, and I went in for a bunch of interviews, and I got the job. But I was, you know, 21, as the head soundtrack supervisor at Rockstar Games doing Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. And it was a lot to deal with, especially, you know, like negotiating contracts and.
So did you do the whole like Fly Low FM and Worldwide FM, or was that after the whole thing?
The Fly Low, no, that would have been after
Much
me.
After.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. San Andreas was, you know, that was everything up to 1992. Mm-hmm. So I had to research all the radio stations, time specific, for that. And Yeah, I mean, it was a great experience. I did it for 3 years there. I did a bunch of video games for them.
What other video games?
I did Midnight Club. I did, what's the game that just came out right now? The original one of the Western thing.
Oh, yeah, I know. Red
Dead Red Revolver. Redemption. Yeah.
Red Redemption.
Red, yeah, Redemption. Yeah. And then, I don't know. There's too many games to mention.
Okay,
but
okay.
So I did a bunch. So I did it for 3 years. But San Andreas was the big one. And when I finished that, I felt like my DJing career had taken off enough that I could support myself DJing full time. And maybe that was, who knows if that was the right decision or not. Maybe I would be like, have a lot more money now.
You should
if
have chased equity.
Yeah, you know.
All good. So talking about BIS, like it's the 20-year anniversary. Was there something that was, I guess, like a fundamental that you'd like to run through all of BIS? Like, is there something that, like, oh, that's what it means or that's what it stands for? Even to yourself, is there anything that you think is like the pillar of it, or do you not think about it that consciously?
No, other than it's people and music that I enjoy. And I think that has to be like kind of the key thing, you know, keeping the lime through it all. But, it really varies what is on the show. And I just don't want to get bored with it, basically. And after doing it for 20 years, it could be easy to get bored with it. And so I just have to keep kind of pushing it so that I'm having fun still.
So has there been any highlights that, or some shows or some events, or some interactions that you think actually that was really interesting or really unique?
I think all the DJ Harvey ones were really fun when he was on the show. He hasn't been on in a long time, though. I think he got really big and forgot about the radio show. But he was always a lot of fun. You know, the James Murphy ones were fun when he was on, but it's been a long time.
What's that man like in terms of, how do you guys, what's your relationship like with him?
I mean, you know, I don't talk to him every day, but, you know, if we see each other, we catch up. But yeah, he's an interesting character. It was fun working with him.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm happy to be doing my own thing too.
Okay, it's great. I guess now moving on to the next generation of broadcasters, I think the media landscape's changed quite considerably in the last 20 years in terms of new media outlets coming out. What advice have you been told which has you've held with you or which has resonated with you? So if you're a young, up and coming broadcaster or DJ, or musician sitting in Hackney, or what's the equivalent of Hackney in New York? Is that
like Bushwick or
and,
something?
And
like
Bushwick.
That.
What advice would you tell those types of people?
For me, just being in New York, it was all about talking to as many people as I could, and learning as much from all the different types of people there were there, and that's always been my thing, is trying to just learn as much as you can and listen to people. And I think that's been a big help.
Last question. But when people think of you in terms of who you are as a person, how do you want to be remembered as such?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that. Yeah. I mean, you want to have an effect on people so that they remember about the radio show. You know, after you're gone, someone still thinks about the radio show. It would be cool to have that effect. Yeah, I don't think about how... I mean, I want people to think of me in a positive way and not think that I don't want to come across as some asshole, you know, who doesn't listen to people and egotistical and...
I'm sure you're not. Just talking to you for the last little bit, you're definitely not egotistical. but are you excited about the future in terms of... There's a big, wave coming through with, algorithm music and Spotify.
Yeah.
And the whole, vinyl, digital, I guess, like, differentiation. Yeah, what are your thoughts on algorithms picking your music?
You know, I think people still search out for an opinion from someone they trust. And I think it's hard to, you know, trust the algorithm so much.
But you're competing, it's either Tim Sweeney Beats and Space Radio Show or Spotify daily selection, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, and I understand that. And I mean, you know, I get lost in the algorithm on YouTube or whatever, you know, listening to things. But, you know, what I, the music I enjoy the most would be if I go to the record store and the guy who knows me at the record store, who's working there, passes me a bunch of records and says, you know, these are the ones you need to listen to. Like, that's what's going to get me the most excited. And I think other people are going to feel the same way. Although, look, not everyone cares that much about music that they would care that much. That some people are going to be just fine with the algorithm, you know? And it's the people that, you know, want to search more that are going to want that extra level.
Tim Sweeney, thanks for listening to Casual Swim. Peace, peace.
Thank you.